The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Thank you all very much.
On the status of getting Americans out of Afghanistan.
Mr. President, what about booster shots? What about confusion about booster shots, sir?
There is the illegitimate president of the United States turning his back on America, and he's doing it over and again, and in particular when the subject of Afghanistan comes up. They just want it to go away. And he still has quite a few allies in the media, although they've certainly exposed the debacle to some degree. But I saw one commentator over the weekend saying that this is, in the end, this is just going to be a little blip on the radar screen for the Biden presidency. Will it? Will it? Look at the article that Brad McDonald wrote last week for his Trumpet brief. It was posted again yesterday on Sunday at the website, thetrumpet.com. And read just about, not just with Afghanistan, but all of these momentous events converging together right at this moment. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Labor Day edition of the Trumpet Daily. We certainly are glad that you're joining our audience today on this Labor Day. We've got Sam and Parker. They're both working on Labor Day. We appreciate their efforts so that this program can go out, and we've got a whole lot packed into today's show. The news cycle continues, lots and lots to get to. There really hasn't been any let-up at all. A couple of notes here in passing. We just passed, Sam reminded me that over the weekend we passed our 11-year anniversary of opening up God's house, and as he reminded me, the first house of God, the Ambassador Auditorium from 1974, I think was the year that it was inaugurated, and then Mr. Armstrong died in 1986, so he was only there to enjoy that magnificent facility for 12 years, and we're already 11 years into God's house here on this campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. Yesterday also was my the anniversary of my mother's death. She died over 17 years ago now, so that's pretty incredible to think about as well, just to look at how fast the time goes by. It really does move. Well, over the weekend, you saw Joe Biden turning his back on America. And then over the weekend, I think it was Saturday morning, we received news of these six planes stranded. Well, not stranded. They're being held hostage. The Taliban won't let these Americans and others out. They won't let the planes take off. Listen to this exchange from one of the Sunday shows yesterday, clip 12.
We have six airplanes at Mazar Sharif Airport, six airplanes with American citizens on them as I speak, also with these interpreters. And the Taliban is holding them hostage for demands right now. The state has cleared these flights, and the Taliban will not let them leave the airport.
And so a hostage crisis, in other words. And yet you don't really hear too much about it. There was a little bit, including that clip as I just gave to you. But where is the media? Where are they? Why aren't they sounding the alarm? Already in the midst of a hostage crisis. This is from the Washington Post. It says the administration was warned early and often. This is with respect to employees and media, journalists in the media. They were warned early and often, the government was, about 600 or so employees, contractors, and family members who worked for U.S.-sponsored news organizations under the umbrella of the U.S. Agency for Global Media. It says the Taliban has killed four of these journalists since 2016 through suicide bomb attacks, and the company's journalists routinely received death threats. So the United States, they know, the government knows all about this. It's just routine. Four have been killed, and they get death threats all the time. Listen to this article. It says, now the leaders of these organizations say the State Department promised to get their vulnerable people out of the country before the August 31 troop withdrawal deadline, only to later renege on that promise amid the chaos and confusion at the Kabul airport. It says here, they describe a harrowing ordeal for these Afghans who were repeatedly turned away by our own troops at the airport gates and whose personal information was handed over to the same Taliban fighters they are fleeing from. So some of this we've covered before, but here is the U.S. government once again breaking its promise to its own people, to its allies, and trusting the Taliban. Listen to what the Secretary of State Blinken had to say on Friday. This is last week, clip three.
Second, we're in constant contact with Americans who remain in Afghanistan and may still wish to leave. We've assigned case management teams to each remaining American citizen who's expressed an interest in leaving.
So they've got a team assigned to each individual American. He says they're in constant contact with them. That was Friday. And then on Saturday, we received news of these six planes grounded. They're not being allowed to leave. And listen to this CNN reporter. She's just quoting here from a State Department statement released yesterday. This is from Secretary of State Blinken's own department. Here's what they have to say about this development over the weekend in Afghanistan. Clip two.
We understand the concern that many people are feeling as they try to facilitate further charter and other passage out of Afghanistan. However, we do not have personnel on the ground. We do not have air assets in the country. We do not control the airspace. We also do not have reliable means to confirm the basic details of charter flights, including who may be organizing them, the number of U.S. citizens and other priority groups on board.
So on Friday, Secretary Blinken says, hey, we're in constant contact. We've got teams assigned to each individual American. And then the hostages. Then the hostage crisis begins. And what do they say? Well, we don't have people on the ground. We don't control the airspace. There's only so much we can find out about these charter flights. I mean, what are we supposed to do? So which is it? Are you in constant contact and working to get each of them out? Or are you just begging the Taliban to let them go? Of course, you know the answer to that question. The U.S. doesn't have any options. There's no leverage for the United States. And so the Taliban, it's nothing for them to come in there and say, nope, not going to take off. You're staying here. You're too valuable. I mean, we're talking about potentially billions and billions of dollars. Listen to what else Blinken had to say Friday, clip four.
So the expectation is to see inclusivity in government. But ultimately, the expectation is to see a government that makes good on commitments that the Taliban have made.
So we really hope that they stick to their word and that their government is inclusive. That's what we're hoping for. That's what the United States is hoping for. That because the Taliban is so merciful, they'll just send all of those hundreds of translators, thousands in fact, hundreds of Americans, perhaps 1,000, maybe more. These people really are delusional in their thinking. You look at what's happening even as we speak. Forget about the track record before we became the Taliban's best friend just 2 weeks ago. Look at what they've done in these past 2 weeks. I'll get to more of that here in just a second. Look at how we've empowered them militarily. Here's a couple of examples of that. Some commentators over the weekend, clip six.
I dare you to go to any National Guard armory, frankly, any active duty infantry battalion, and find as much equipment as the Taliban now has.
I think we have effectively made the Taliban one of the most well-equipped armies in the world on the taxpayers' dollar.
Now, they're not as well-trained as we are, that's true. But give them time. Give them time with the Chinese to become proficient with this. We've handed them one of the most lethal militaries in the world to a legitimized terror state.
We just gave it all over to them. Didn't ask for anything in return. Didn't try to get our hardware home and didn't blow it up. We just gave it to the Taliban. And they're giving a good part of it to Iran. This is from the Times of London. It says a convoy of U.S. military vehicles provided to Afghan forces has been filmed heading for Tehran, having been handed over to the Iranian authorities. So is this great news? Everything was an extraordinary success, said Joe Biden, except for the parts that Donald Trump caused. I mean, on the one hand, it was a great success. On the other hand, it's all Trump's fault. If you want to say it was a failure, then blame Trump. A great success that these weapons are now being transferred to Iran? It says the loss of the military equipment to Iran, America's arch foe in the Middle East, is a further embarrassment to the Pentagon after the Taliban were seen parading in Kabul in front of captured U.S. supplied vehicles. It says the convoy to Iran included Humvees and MRAPs, light armored vehicles, specially protected against mines. The social media channel that first showed the film and specializes in Iranian military affairs said the Iranians had also taken possession of American tanks. American tanks finding their way to Tehran. When did we evacuate? That would be August 30th. We got out a day early to please the Taliban. And what is today? September 6th? And Iran already has the tanks in a week? That's right. It says here, Iran's relationship with Afghanistan and the Taliban is a sensitive and a matter of dispute. The U.S. believes that Iran supported the Taliban's rise to power. So they helped the Taliban return to power, and the Taliban have in turn given tanks, U.S.-built tanks, and other weapons to Tehran. And, of course, if you listen to Joe Biden, he would say, well, but they're arch enemies. They don't get along. It's the Sunni-Shia thing. The Asia Times had a piece on how that Iran and the Taliban are likely going to set aside their past disagreements and work together. The article is titled, Iran Taliban Whitewash the Past to Restore Relations. They're working together now. Working together against the great Satan. And China, of course, they're happy to take advantage of this situation as well. Listen to Sarah Carter over the weekend on Fox News, clip 5.
I've also spoken to U.S. sources and Western intelligence officials who have told me that not only have the Russians been training over the past year, the Taliban, but there was also information that the Chinese may have also been involved in training the Taliban over the past year, and that the White House was very well aware of this.
Yeah, we knew all about it. This is an attack from within, among other things. You've got China, Russia, Iran, and then now the Taliban. And then you've got the United States through all of this, well aware of what Russia and China were doing. And yet we continued right on. Empty out the airfield first, get the army out of there first, and then beg and plead with the Taliban and their allies, Iran, China, Russia, beg and plead for them to return our citizens, to return our allies to safety. It gets worse, actually. This is from Fox News. It says Americans involved in private evacuation efforts tell Fox News that the State Department is the only reason their planes haven't left Afghanistan. Now, these six that are being held hostage, evidently, they were given clearance from the State Department. They were given clearance, but here's a story where it says the State Department is preventing some of these evacuation efforts from going forward. An attack. America under attack. That's what it should be titled, this article. It says Americans engaged in the rescue of U.S. citizens, SIVs, and green card holders left behind by President Biden in Afghanistan are horrified by what they describe as inexplicable delays from the State Department that are preventing evacuation flights from leaving the country. So even the State Department, they're dragging their feet on this. Why? They left Americans stranded, and now they're getting in the way of these efforts by private contractors to go in there and to save Americans. What more proof do we need to know that this is a communist attack from within as well? America under attack. It's right here on the desk. Call our operators and request your free copy, 1-866-930-3024. Call our operators today and request America under attack and get great again while you're at it, and request the United States and Britain in prophecy as well, so that you can know where we are in Bible prophecy, so that you can know how serious these times are in which we're living. We're coming right up to the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, the last great day. And in case you haven't noticed in recent years, world events are pretty intense right around this time. We're drawing near to the return of Jesus Christ. That's why. And Satan is angry. Satan is filled with wrath. Revelation 12 says that he knows he has but a short time. He knows he's only got just a little bit of time left. He is stirring up America's enemies. He's attacking America from within. And the world's not going to be better off when that policeman that really has kept things in order for the most part since 1945, with the policeman gone, well, it's just like what we've seen in America over the past year. Go ahead and defund the police. Go ahead and remove law enforcement or handcuff them and then see what happens. What happens? Well, criminals just, they're having a ball. They can waltz right into establishments and loot and burn and kill and murder. Now we're about to see that on the international stage and the international community. America leaves Afghanistan in shame, humiliated. And look at what fills the power void. We were talking 1 week ago about this disastrous evacuation, and 1 week later, here is video footage of American tanks rolling into Tehran. That's the king of the South. That is the king of the South. It's prophesied in your Bible, Daniel 11 and verse 40. Become familiar with that verse. With that prophecy, because it's about to be fulfilled. That clash between the king of the north and the king of the south, that happens just before the Great Tribulation or right at the outset of it. And then we're just a few years away from the return of Christ to this earth. It says here, the State Department's delays are recklessly endangering American lives. Three different individuals involved in the private evacuation effort told Fox News. Three different people, three different witnesses. I don't know if Glenn Beck was one of them, but he was on one of the Fox shows a week or two ago. I guess it would have been just a few days ago, last week sometime. And he was saying the same thing. Yeah, our efforts are being impeded by our own government. How do you explain this? Unless you understand a little bit about Bible prophecy. About 2 Kings 14, it is. The affliction is bitter. There is no help. Only God, only God's miraculous intervention can give us a respite from this, can give us a mini resurgence. It says here, if one life is lost as a result of this, the blood is on the White House's hands. The blood is on their hands, that individual said, adding, it's not the Taliban that is holding this up. As much as it sickens me to say that, it's the United States government. It just sickens him. Here's an American contractor willing to risk his life to get other Americans out, and it sickens him that his own government would prevent the operation from going forward. Says here, the individual suggested that the State Department's obstruction is motivated in part by embarrassment that private individuals are rescuing Americans that the U.S. government left behind. Yep, it's all about saving face. It's all a matter of politics. Well, you can't make the government look bad because we did it perfect. This was extraordinarily successful. This played out exactly the way we said it would. I mean, this is really demonic thinking. And what, leave aside, I guess, the spiritual element, but where is their sense of just patriotism? Look, we've made a mistake. A contractor's going to help to bail us out. Well, let's let him in there. Let him take these Americans to safety. Can't do it. Can't do it. It's all about looking good, not being embarrassed. It's all about the politics of it, and no wonder. No wonder ordinary Americans are just furious. And then you see Biden's poll numbers sinking like the Titanic. Listen to this. Somehow or another, MSNBC let this one get through over the weekend, clip 9.
Meanwhile, new polling shows President Biden's approval sinking fast amid the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. In the latest NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll, 43% of Americans say they approve of the president's job performance. That's down 6% from July and the lowest mark for President Biden since taking office.
43% approval, and it's down 6% since July. It's just plummeting. And this is from The Telegraph, by the way. On a related note, it says the White House is deliberately keeping Kamala Harris insulated from the Afghanistan withdrawal debacle to clear her way for a future presidential run, sources have told The Telegraph. So we got to keep her in hiding. This is just the way, this is the way the Communist Party operates. Keep him in the basement so he can't foul this up anyway. And then hey, we got COVID. So we got mail-in ballots. They're going to be dumped in by the thousands. Oh, that's on video too, by the way. Hopefully I have time to get to that story. We might have to go a little extra today. It says here, they also noted even after the chaotic Afghanistan withdrawal, for which Mr. Biden took responsibility, he remains slightly more popular than Ms. Harris, according to the polls. So even after the Afghan, this tells you just how unpopular Kamala Harris is. What did she get in the Democratic primary? I think less than 1% of the vote. But this was the one that Barack Obama wanted in there. This is the communist that he anointed. So now he's going to try to protect her. She's still unbelievably unpopular. She's more unpopular than Joe Biden? That's right. That's coming from The Telegraph over in the UK. Pretty amazing development. There was another crazy story. I think it was over the weekend or maybe it was at the end of last week. Here again, positive proof that the media will believe anything. It will believe any story. It won't even check it. It won't even look into it. If it comfortably fits in their narrative, they are going to take it and run with it. Rachel Maddow is going to take it and tweet about it. And that's what they all did. It was this rolling. It actually involves Oklahoma. A little local news here for you. If you're from Oklahoma, it's a Rolling Stone piece. Publishing this headline from a couple days ago, gunshot victims left waiting as horse dewormer overdoses overwhelm Oklahoma hospitals, doctor says. So, and then you see the line. Keep in mind, right now it's about 100 degrees in Oklahoma. And look at the picture. Look at the picture that they included with this story. You got all these people masked up. It's from January when it's freezing outside. So they're wearing coats, long pants. They're bundling up. And this is the picture that goes together with the article. That you would have thought would have been the first clue that maybe something isn't right about this story. As it is, they ran with it. Here's a bit from the Rolling Stone piece. It says the ERs are so backed up that the gunshot victims were. This is from article say? I think it's rural Oklahoma. So evidently there's all kinds of gunshot victims in rural Oklahoma that can't get into the doctors. They can't get into the hospital because all these people are lined up to take ivermectin. Says here, the ERs are so backed up that gunshot victims were having hard times getting to facilities where they can get definitive care and be treated. It says all of their ambulances are stuck at the hospital waiting for a bed to open so that they can take the patient in, and they don't have any. That's it, said this one doctor. It says if there's no ambulance to take their call, there's no ambulance to come to the call. So, how many shootings are there in rural Oklahoma? I'm not sure, but it can't be that much. It can't be that many. And then why does the picture have all of these people standing in line wearing winter clothing? Well, it turns out that the doctor, the one source that Rolling Stone had, was lying. He was lying. And Rolling Stone, I mean, come on, it's busy. They're busy journalists. They don't have time to look into the and verify. Or maybe try to get a second witness or a second. The hospital comes out right away and says, no, that's not true. And oh, by the way, this guy hasn't even worked for us in 2 months. So he just made it up. I mean, this has to be our favorite fake news story for 2021. We're not even at December 31 yet, but this is going to be at the top of the list for sure. Everybody on board. There was a Twitter feed that just tracked all of the blue checks in the media tweeting this out. Oh, I can't believe they're taking this horse medication. I mean, ivermectin's been around for decades and probably recommended for human beings billions of times. But now all of a sudden, and note this, all of a sudden, these communist propagandists in the media are very concerned about what you put in your body. Now, with respect to the vaccine, even if it's not tested, even if it's not approved by the FDA, even if it's got this spike protein, even if it's causing all kinds of brain hemorrhages and such, you put that in your body and just keep quiet and take it. But here, I mean, ivermectin, which some people, look at Joe Rogan. We had the clip for you last week, didn't get around to it, but he started to feel COVID coming on and he immediately took all these vitamin dosages and ivermectin and vitamin D and such to treat the illness. Now, we're not big advocates of that sort of thing, but so far as we can tell, in this world system of medicine, quite a few people have done that and bounced back. President Trump was one of them. He was flown off to Walter Reed on Friday and then back in the White House on Monday. Joe Rogan said it was, yeah, Sunday was the worst. I was back at work on Wednesday. Why are they so hostile to ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine? And yet they're just insistent. You put this jab in you. This is from the NPR in response to Joe Rogan. It says the podcast host Joe Rogan, who has dismissed COVID vaccines, said he tested positive and is taking a cocktail of unproven treatments, including ivermectin, a deworming drug for cows that the FDA warns people should not ingest. People have been taking it for decades. Okay, so it's used with animals too. And we're not pro-drug in any case. But it's irresponsible, dishonest reporting. Why would you take something that a horse would take? Well, why take the vaccine? That's a lot worse than ivermectin, in my estimation. This is from The Hill. It says here, they write how that ivermectin has not proven to prevent COVID outside of a clinical trial. See, we really need to test this. Oh, really? Like the vaccine? Still hasn't really been tested. We're being experimented on with these drugs. And here's one that's been around for decades and decades and used by millions of human beings. And I'm pretty sure it hasn't killed as many people as the Pfizer jab has killed. That's the truth of it. That is the truth. You see, what does it always get down to here? It's control, money, and mail-in ballots. It's one of those three. It's probably all three for these communists. They want control. over the populace. And of course, it's big bucks for Big Pharma, Bill Gates, and those kinds of people. Anthony Fauci. And then, of course, they couldn't have pulled off the steal last year were it not for mail-in ballots, were it not for the lockdowns and the pandemic. Listen to them talk down in Australia or in the UK, these experts. Mayor de Blasio in New York. He, of course, New York's been just devastated by all the rainfall and the flooding. 44 people dying last week. We talked about that on Friday's show. And listen to how Mayor de Blasio ties all of these tragic events in together with what they've learned from the pandemic and the lockdowns. Clip 11.
I think it's a different ballgame now, a different strategy. Instead of assuming, as we have in the past, for example, a travel ban was a very, very rare thing in the past. The few times I've used that is when we were expecting massive blizzards. But now seeing what happened on Wednesday, a travel ban is the kind of thing I want to introduce into the equation early in each storm as a possibility, and then pull the trigger if I have to, and literally tell people off the streets, out of the subways, clear the way.
See, the game has changed. We've learned from this pandemic. Hey, banning things, banning this, locking this over here. That's now, I mean, he thinks this is now what we do. And next time there's a disaster, oh, by the way, let's also address climate change. But also, anytime there's a disaster of any kind, we're going to tell you what you can and cannot do. They're not going to let go, are they? Of course they're not going to let go. And along the way, if there's any pushback, they'll just shove them out of the way. The UK, there was a story about, the JVCI. This is the Britain's scientific panel coming out and saying that, we don't want you to vaccinate 16 and 17-year-olds. They're not a vulnerable group, and the vaccine could be dangerous with young people. So that's what they suggested. Now, the British government, they don't like that because they want to jab away. I mean, just jab and go down as young as you possibly can. So the government's been working to sort of revise this panel, get guys out that they don't like. This one, Professor Robert Dingwall. And keep in mind, these are not right-wing conservatives. These are really mainstream experts. But if they don't go all the way with the health secretary, if they don't go all the way with the authoritarian saying, you take the jab, then they get them out and they replace them. The British government wants it to be 12-year-olds. So there's this tug of war going on between the JVCI and the British government. So now the government, let's just read this from the Telegraph. It says, the Telegraph understands ministers are confident that Professor Whitty and the other experts will give the plan a go-ahead in the middle of next week. So they're pushing. They're pushing, and one of the excuses that they're using, the health secretary told the chief medical officer on this board to consider the vaccination of 12 to 15-year-olds from a broader perspective. So the board has come out and said, look, it could be dangerous, and this young people are at no risk of dying of COVID. But then the health secretary comes back and says, well, you've got to consider this in a broader perspective, which is what? Everybody needs the jab if this is ever going to go away. So even if it might have some dangerous side effects, even if young people are not in a vulnerable category, give them the jab anyway. We've got to try to stamp this out. And then you have all of these cases of people still getting COVID even after they've gotten the jab. Pretty amazing. Listen to going back to control and money and mail-in ballots. Listen to the leader down in Victoria in Australia. This is clip 7.
To protect the health system, we've got everybody locked down. We're going to move to a situation where, to protect the health system, we're going to lock out people who are not vaccinated and can be. If you're making the choice not to get vaccinated, then you're making the wrong choice.
How'd you like to live under that guy's leadership? And we're going to lock you out. If you're not vaccinated, then you can't really function in society because you've made the wrong choice. You better get the jab, in other words. Here he is again, clip 8.
As this becomes absolutely a pandemic of the unvaccinated and we open everything up, it's not going to be safe for people who are not vaccinated to be roaming around the place spreading the virus. That's what they'll be doing. So there's every reason to get vaccinated. But yes, there's going to be a vaccinated economy, and you get to participate in that if you are vaccinated.
You can participate in the economy if you're vaccinated, he says. This is Australia, not China, not the CCP in China. That man's a communist, through and through. This is worse than China. The Atlantic, even the Atlantic is shocked. The left-wing Atlantic is shocked by what's happening down under. They write, how long can a country maintain emergency restrictions on its citizens' lives while still calling itself a liberal democracy? How can you even call yourself a liberal democracy? Australia has been testing the limits. Before 2020, the idea of Australia all but forbidding its citizens from leaving the country, a restriction associated with communist regimes, was unthinkable. This was unthinkable just a year and a half ago. It says here, interstate travel within Australia is also severely restricted, and the government of South Australia, one of the country's 6 states, developed and is now testing an app as Orwellian as any in the free world to enforce its quarantine rules. People in South Australia will be forced to download an app that combines facial recognition and geolocation. The state will text them at random times, and thereafter they will have 15 minutes to take a picture of their face in the location where they are supposed to be. I mean, I can't help but laugh. It's so crazy. And yet it's happening. Should they fail, the local police department will be sent to follow up in person. We don't tell them how often or when or on a random basis. They have to reply within 15 minutes, Premier Stephen Marshall explained. I think every South Australian should feel pretty proud that we are the national pilot for the home-based quarantine app. I'm sure they do. I'm sure they're really proud of this. Wow! We've got to put this app on so you can follow us around like Big Brother? It says Australia is undoubtedly a democracy with multiple political parties, regular elections, and the peaceful transfer of power. But if a country indefinitely forbids its own citizens from leaving its borders, strands tens of thousands of its citizens abroad, puts strict rules on interstate travel, prohibits citizens from leaving home without an excuse from an official government list, mandates masks even when people are outdoors and socially distanced, deploys the military to enforce those rules, bans protests, and arrests and fines dissenters, is that country still a liberal democracy? Is it? Australia under attack. Just like in America. It's not as bad here, thankfully. But this is an attack, an audacious one at that. It says, enduring rules of that sort would certainly render a country a police state. This is the Atlantic. And it's a serious piece. It's not a joke. It says, in year 2 of the pandemic, with COVID-19 now thought to be endemic rather than a temporary emergency the nation could avoid, how much time must pass before we must regard Australia as illiberal and unfree? Pretty strong warning there, coming from, of all places, the Atlantic. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can write the show, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Last week in one of the programs, I talked about the trouble with Harvard, and we go through some of this material from Alan Bloom's book, Closing of the American Mind, and another article from Esquire, I think it is, back in 1981 by Timothy Foote. The big Ivy League schools, the prestigious universities of today, they're in a lot of trouble. Anything goes. Absolute freedom when it comes to any kind of human behavior. Sam had mentioned after the show where I talked about how it's in trouble today, the university in general as well. He mentioned that when he was about to head off to Armstrong College years ago that there were quite a few of his classmates that said, well, why would you go to a small school in the middle of Oklahoma, of all places, and it's not accredited? Are you serious? You're going to go to a small school of 60, 70, 80 students, and that's it? How can you even take that seriously? This was brought to Sam's mind when I was talking about how that this model, this pattern's established right here on this campus. It's going to spread over all the earth in the wonderful world tomorrow. And you have to see ahead. You have to take the long view. And now there's plenty of short-term gain coming out of this college, God's college, receiving the liberal arts education, putting down that right spiritual foundation. Before you go on to get into a career or whatever it might be, there's a lot of value in that. Even for graduates coming out of college here in Edmond today. But looking ahead, looking far down the road, I mean, everyone's going to benefit from Armstrong College or Ambassador College or whatever God names them, because they're going to be all over the earth. Sam was saying that even if you look at Harvard's history, if you go back to their first class, their first graduating class in 1642, they had a grand total of 9 graduates. So even Harvard started small. You can't just look at a small beginning and dismiss it. God says don't. Don't do that in Zechariah 4. Remember your small beginnings. Remember the faith. Remember the growing pains. Remember the trailblazing. Harvard had just 9 graduates. What if the people going to Harvard back in the 1640s had friends that said, how could you go to Harvard? There's just 9 people? Really? Well, Harvard's grown large today, but you can't say that it's gotten better. It's much, much worse. All of the Ivy League schools are. William Buckley, he wrote his classic, God and Man, at Yale. In 1951, it became an instant classic in conservative circles and somewhat controversial as well, because he was basically saying, look, Yale is a mess. This was in 1951. And of course, in the major media, Yale was seen as this conservative, you know, bastion. This is from Time magazine. It held fast to old and solid principles. It says, in the best and truest sense of the word, Yale has stood from its earliest beginnings for conservatism triumphant. It's a conservative institution. Yale, they said. And of course, Buckley comes along and just destroys this perception. No, it's not. They're actually, they're getting God and the Bible out. They've been banned. I mean, this is the beginning of this, the beginning, I should say, of this demonic attack to blot out anything that would have to do with the Bible. Buckley wrote his book in 1951, so he's basically talking about, you know, trends that were happening during the 1940s. He interviewed all these students, former students, and so on, and he exposed what he called an extraordinarily irresponsible educational attitude, one that encouraged students to reject God and his authoritative word and to embrace relativism, to embrace secularism. As I say, this was a provocative and shocking accusation to make about Yale, but he was right. He was right, and his book has stood the test of time. It's still considered a classic. He was right when he wrote it in 1951, and it's much, much worse today. Even as late as 1937, if you go back to maybe a few years before Buckley started in with his research, a man named Charles Seymour, during his inaugural address at Yale, as Yale's new president, he urged administrators and faculty members to freely recognize the tremendous validity and power of the teachings of Christ in our life and death struggle against the forces of selfish materialism. I mean, can you imagine a president at Yale getting up and saying anything like that today? We need the teachings, the power of the teachings of Christ in our life and death struggle against the forces of selfish materialism. So here are schools that started very small, but look at what they've grown into. Buckley said that God's teachings had been rendered powerless by the forces of secularism. He was right. Well, I've got an article here. Let me just read some of it. This is about the Ivy League schools in general and how that with the sexual revolution and with so many of our societal ills, it's the Ivy League schools, you know, the most prestigious ones, that have led the way towards Sodom and Gomorrah. This was from the Boston Globe a few years ago. It says, in the Woodstock era, the advent of co-ed dorms caused a stir, with Life magazine proclaiming the development an intimate revolution on campus. Co-ed floors came along over the next two decades, giving college students immediate proximity to each other. The next step, co-ed suites and bathrooms, brought the sexes even closer together. Now, some colleges are crossing the final threshold, allowing men and women to share rooms. At the urging of student activists, see, the students, they're the ones pushing and pushing and pushing. At the urging of student activists, more than 30 campuses across the country have adopted what colleges call gender-neutral rooming assignments, almost half of them within the past 2 years. This article was written, by the way, back in 2008. So now we're 13 years on from this, and who knows where we are today? You don't even want to look into it. It's Sodom and Gomorrah. That's what it is with the Ivy League schools leading the way. They have to. I mean, there's just such a strong demand. Everything's got to be gender neutral. You know, unless you're at a press conference with Jen Psaki, then it's clearly man and woman. Of course. Well, you haven't been pregnant. But in the college university sphere, all the lines are blurred. Everything goes. And anyone who would stand against it, I mean, you're in danger of just being blotted out. It says here, those days of colleges monitoring students' relationships have long passed, says Dartmouth's associate dean. Yeah, we're not really here. As a dean or associate dean of students, we're not really here to monitor student behavior. They can do whatever they want. This is what Yale and Harvard have become. I mean, what would John Harvard, a Puritan minister, what would he have, what would he think of Harvard today? Here's this university, started out as a theological seminary. Did you know this? Harvard started out as an institution to train ministers. And look at what it's turned into. This is inscribed on the gates of the university at Harvard. It says here, after God had carried us safe to New England, and we had builded our houses, provided necessaries for our livelihood, reared convenient places for God's worship, and settled the civil government, one of the next things we longed for and looked after was to advance learning and perpetuate it to posterity, dreading to leave an illiterate ministry to the churches when our present ministers lie in the dust. We've got to teach others at the university level so that they can head up our churches. We've got to bring God and the Bible into this. Did you know that 10 clergymen who graduated from Harvard during the late 1600s, did you know that they went on to found Yale University? Yale was founded in 1701 by these graduates of Harvard. And why did they establish another university, a different university? Well, they wanted a school with an even stricter form of theology than what Harvard taught. They wanted to raise the standard at Yale. They wanted it to be more Bible-oriented. This is Yale and Harvard of the late 1600s and early 1700s. And since that time, Yale, and you see it even with some of the commentary around or leading up to Bill Buckley's book from 1951, since that time, Yale's been seen as more of a traditional conservative university in the Ivy League, at least as compared to Harvard. Buckley comes along in 1951 and he really exposed Yale, what had happened to Yale. So here are these institutions that started incredibly small. There was a mustard seed beginning. I'm sure they had a grand vision for how this would play out. I'm sure they thought, well, if we can just have an educated clergy to sweep right across the country, I mean, think of what can be done for the nation. Well, even then, they didn't have God's truth, as we know. But what a difference when you look at the early beginnings of Harvard and Yale, and when you consider what they're churning out today. They're leading the way in this progressive revolution. Armstrong College is quite different. We talked at the top about how fast the time goes by. 11 years since we opened up Armstrong Auditorium, and it's been 20 years since we started with God's College, Herbert W. Armstrong College. And it's grown a little bit in terms of numbers. It's grown a lot, though, with respect to this vision, education with vision. And as I was saying last week, it will expand over all the earth, and it will improve and strengthen the health, the spiritual health of nations everywhere. That's now just ahead of us. We're not that far away from the establishment of God's kingdom on this earth. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to submit some feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.